Welcome back into the archives, everyone. I'm Em.
And I'm Nick.
And each week here, we like to dig into haunted places, strange legends, forgotten mysteries, and stories that continue to haunt people long after events themselves have passed.
And today we're going to be talking about a castle,
An actual castle.
which is not something you expect to hear about in Springfield, Missouri.
Yeah, precisely that. When someone says castle, your brain usually jumps to Europe, Scotland, maybe Germany, but definitely not the middle of Missouri.
I honestly would have guessed someone just built a really expensive house and decided to call it a castle. And I also want to note real quick for the listeners, before we get too deep into this, we have technical difficulties. So M may sound a little quiet tonight
Please bear
because,
with us.
yeah, she is not using her mic or anything because none of that decides to work right now. So
Perfect.
just a little heads up. Hopefully we'll get it ironed out within the next before next week's episode. We have everything we need coming in. It just is not here yet. So, anyway.
This isn't someone's mansion pretending to be medieval. This is a genuine stone castle complete with towers, battlements, enormous halls, hidden spaces beneath the building, and according to many people who've walked its halls, it's also haunted.
Why wouldn't it be haunted?
Well, of course it is. We're talking about it. Today, we're exploring the history and the hauntings of Pythian Castle. Over the last century, this building has been an orphanage, a home for elderly residents, a military service club during World War II, a place where celebrities entertained recovering soldiers, a headquarters for social services, and perhaps most unsettling of all, its basement once housed German and Italian prisoners of war. It's a lot of history packed into one building.
Which usually isn't great news if you're trying to avoid ghosts.
Yeah, I would agree. Because one thing that we've noticed doing this podcast, buildings with one tragic chapter can sometimes become haunted. Buildings with five or six tragic chapters, those are usually the ones that people never stop talking about. So, turn down the lights, grab a flashlight, and step inside the Pythian Castle.
Before we get into the ghost stories, why was there even a castle in Missouri? Because that's kind of throwing me off.
It is definitely unusual, and if you drove past it today, you'd probably stop because it looks completely out of place. Massive limestone walls, castle towers, decorative battlements, huge arched windows. It's beautiful, but also a little eerie, especially once you know what happened inside. The castle officially opened in 1914. But its story officially begins decades earlier with an organization called the Knights of Pythias.
That sounds incredibly medieval.
And that was honestly intentional. The Knights of Pythias were founded in 1864 during the Civil War by a man named Justice H. Rathbone. He wasn't a knight, he wasn't military, he was actually a teacher, actor and composer working as a clerk for the United States Treasury. But he believed America desperately needed something after the Civil War, like brotherhood, unity, forgiveness. The organization was inspired by an ancient Greek legend about two friends, Damon and Pythias. According to the legend, one friend was sentenced to death. He asked permission to return home one last time to settle his affairs, promising he'd come back. The king laughed. Why would anyone willingly return to be executed? So, Damon volunteered to remain behind as collateral. If he didn't come back, then Damon would die instead.
That's one heck of a friendship.
And at the last possible moment, Pythias returned exactly as promised. The king was so moved by their loyalty that he pardoned both men. The story became a symbol of friendship, honor, sacrifice, and trust. Those became the values of the Knights of the Pythias.
It's kind of a wholesome little origin story there.
Yeah, I agree. And the origin exploded in popularity. Within just a few decades, there were chapters all across America, including three right in Springfield. At one point, they were one of the country's largest fraternal organizations. Their members weren't just meeting socially, they believed in taking care of each other, helping widows, helping children, aging members. And remember, this was before Social Security, before Medicare, before many government safety nets even existed. If your family died, you often had nowhere to go. The Knights wanted to change that.
So the castle wasn't originally built to scare ghost hunters.
No, it was actually built out of compassion. In the early 1900s, Springfield wanted desperately to become home to the Missouri Python Home. Newspapers campaigned for it, business leaders campaigned for it, citizens donated money. Everyone wanted this project. And it wasn't just because it would help people. It would also bring jobs like construction, visitors, businesses, prestige. It was considered a huge opportunity. Eventually, local residents raised $15,000, which was a massive amount of money at the time. That money purchased more than 50 acres of land. Then the land was essentially sold to the Knights of Pythias for just $1. Springfield really, really wanted this castle. The city even promised additional improvements. They agreed to extend streetcar lines, sewer lines. They built a nearby elementary school for the children who would live there. They even reserved burial plots in Hazelwood Cemetery for future residents who had nowhere else to be buried. That's how committed the community was. Finally, after years of delay, construction began in late 1911. By 1913, the massive stone structure stood completed. Its grand dedication took place in May of 1914. According to newspaper accounts, the entire city celebrated. The front page welcomed the visiting Knights of Pythias in giant letters. People poured into Springfield. Parades marched through the town, and it was one of the biggest civic celebrations the city had ever seen. Nobody there could have imagined that more than 100 years later, people wouldn't just remember the celebration, they'd be remembering the ghost.
So, who actually was staying at the castle? Because it sounds like it's kind of like a revolving door.
So it was two groups, orphans and elderly members connected to the Knights of Pythias. Again, this wasn't unusual for the era. Without modern social programs, organizations often cared for their own. The building became home for children who'd lost their parents. At the same time, older residents who could no longer care for themselves also lived there. It sounds like a kind of an unusual combination today, but reports from the time described it almost like one giant extended family. The elderly residents had jobs. One cared for the chickens, another handled dairy production, others helped around the grounds. The property even operated as a working farm. It was largely self-sustaining. The children attended the nearby elementary school during the day, and on weekends, visitors came to the castle. Church services were held in its chapel. Community groups gathered there. Residents gave tours. Some elderly residents reportedly loved showing visitors around. One newspaper even quoted a resident saying it was as near like home as it possibly to be.
It's kind of a sweet little gig they got going on.
I think it is too. I think it's very sweet. And honestly, it's easy to overlook these quieter moments because we know the building as a haunted location now, but for decades, it really was home. Children celebrated birthdays there, people made friends, some grew old together, some died there. Funerals are even held inside the castle's upstairs theater. That theater, remarkably, still exists today. Imagine standing in a room where generations laughed during performances, then later attended memorial services for friends they'd lost. History has a way of layering emotions into places, and Pythian Castle has had over a century to collect those layers.
And if you really believe in paranormal theories, then those layers might matter.
Many investigators believe hauntings don't necessarily come from violence alone. Sometimes they're connected to emotion, routine, attachment, people who spent years calling one place home. And if that's true, this castle had plenty of opportunities to leave something behind. But the castle's quiet years would not last forever, because before long, the entire world would be thrown into war. And Bathyn Castle would become part of one of the largest military hospitals in the United States. Soldiers would arrive, thousands of wounded men would pass through, the basement would gain a far darker purpose, and decades later, many people would begin wondering whether every resident ever truly left.
Oh, so now that's where things really start getting creepy.
Yeah, so we left Bathyn Castle during what was arguably its most peaceful era. It had become a home, a real home for orphaned children and elderly members. The residents farmed, attended churches, but as we've said, history has a way of changing course without warning. By the early 1940s, the world was on the brink of another global war, and the castle was about to become something no one had ever envisioned when its cornerstone was laid.
It's kind of wild how one building can live so many different lives.
Yeah, if these walls could talk, they'd tell 100 different stories. And unfortunately, some people believe they actually do. So by the late 1930s, the need for institutions like the Pythian Home was beginning to disappear. The Social Security Act had been signed into law in 1935, and for the first time, many elderly Americans had financial assistance that simply hadn't existed before. Programs for widows, children, and families slowly began replacing the role organizations like the Knights of Pythias had once filled. The castle had originally been built to house around 200 residents. By 1941, only about 30 people remained. After nearly 3 decades, the difficult decision was made to close the home.
That was probably heartbreaking for those people who live there.
Yeah, I imagine it was. I mean, think about it. Some of those children had grown up there. Some of the elderly residents had spent years there. To them, it wasn't like an institution, it was literally their home. Many people had nowhere else. And while newspapers reported the closure almost matter-of-factly, you can't help but wonder what it felt like for the people packing up their belongings, walking through those halls for the last time, saying goodbye to the only home some of them had ever really known. It's very upsetting. Almost immediately after the Pythian home closed, history intervened. Construction was already underway on what would become O'Reilly General Army Hospital, located directly next to the castle. Initially, there was some uncertainty over what would happen to the building. The knights even questioned whether the army would have any use for it. As it turned out, the army wanted it very badly. So the government purchased the castle, and it became part of one of the largest military medical facilities in the region during World War II. O'Reilly General Army Hospital treated roughly 40,000 wounded and sick soldiers. Later, another 60,000 military dependents and veterans would receive care there. It's approximately 100,000 people connected to this hospital over its lifetime.
That's honestly way bigger than I would have thought.
Yeah, me too. And at its busiest, nearly 2,000 people were on the hospital grounds every single day. Imagine all of that activity with the doctors, nurses, ambulances, military police, families, patients recovering, people receiving life-changing news, some celebrating, people grieving. It would have been an emotional place around the clock.
Yeah, whatever. That's crazy. All that, like,
Yeah,
activity, all that movement
in
all day.
one place. Here's the interesting part. The castle wasn't turned into another hospital ward. Instead, it became an enlisted service club. Think of it as a place where soldiers could temporarily forget that they were surrounded by war. The army completely remodeled the interior. There was a library containing around 10,000 books, which sounds like a dream, a bowling alley in the basement, a snack bar, lounges, live entertainment, dances, boxing matches, movie screenings, concerts, you name it. It became one of the social centers of the hospital.
That's kind of nice for them. Because, I mean, if you were recovering from combat, you'd probably want to go somewhere to feel like somewhat normal again.
I agree. The military recognized that healing wasn't just physical. Morale definitely mattered. Entertainment mattered. Human connection was important. Some incredibly famous performers even visited. Singer and actress Jeanette MacDonald entertained troops there in 1942. Sorry, girl, way before my time. Other
Just a
performers
little.
traveled just a little. Other performers traveled through Springfield specifically to boost the spirits of recovering soldiers. For a few hours, the castle wasn't a hospital. It wasn't a reminder of war. It was just music, laughter, friendship, and hope.
Which makes what happened downstairs that much more unsettling.
It definitely does, because while soldiers were dancing upstairs, the basement had a very different purpose. Today, if you book one of the castle's ghost tours, there's the one place that almost everyone talks about, and that would be the basement. It's cold, it's dimly lit, its stone walls immediately feel older than the rest of the building, and during World War II, parts of that basement were reportedly used to house German and Italian prisoners of war.
That's wild because it's not something you'd ever expect to hear connected to Missouri.
Right, like at all. When most people think about like those types of camps, you're picturing Europe, not Missouri.
Yeah.
But thousands of Axis prisoners were actually transported throughout the United States during the war. Some worked on farms, others were held near military facilities at Python Castle. Historical records indicate that German and Italian prisoners were kept in basement cells. There were also interrogation rooms, and those spaces still exist. Visitors can actually walk through areas believed to have been used during that period.
I think that's one of the creepiest things about that place. It's not like a Hollywood set, and these are real rooms, real walls, and real doors that real people came through, and you can go see now.
Yeah, and while there isn't any evidence that these prisoners were tortured or mistreated here, we do know that they weren't exactly living comfortably. Imagine being 1,000 miles from home, not knowing if your family was alive, not knowing when or if you'd ever return. Even without the violence, fear leaves an impression. Isolation leaves an impression. Same with despair. And whether you believe in ghosts or not, those are very powerful emotions.
That's something we've talked about before on the show. Not every haunted location has some horrific massacre attached to it. Sometimes it's just decades of really intense human emotion.
It's almost like layers stacked on top of one another. First, children separated from their families, then the elderly residents spending their final years there, funerals inside the theater, then a war, thousands of wounded soldiers, prisoners of war, medical staff under constant pressure, people arriving with life-changing injuries, some people never leaving. Even if every single death that occurred there was completely natural, that's still an incredible amount of emotional energy that's associated with one place. And it's worth mentioning, current owner Tamara Finocchiaro has said that dozens of people are believed to have died in the castle over the years, particularly during the decades it operated as a home for the elderly. Now, that's not unusual. It was, after all, a residence for aging adults. But when ghost hunters hear the phrase dozens of death in one building, their ears tend to perk up.
Well, that's definitely something that paranormal investigators are going to notice.
World War II eventually came to an end. O'Reilly General Army Hospital closed in 1946. It did briefly reopen as a Veterans Administration Tuberculosis Hospital before eventually closing again. Much of the surrounding property would later become what is now Evangel University. But the castle stayed with the U.S. Army. For years, it served as an Army Reserve Center. Then, beginning in the early 1980s, it became home to the Ozarks Area Community Action Corporation. Once again, another chapter, another group of people walking those same hallways, working in offices that had once been dormitories, holding meetings in rooms where children had once slept. History just kept changing and the castle simply adapted. Until the army decided it no longer needed the building. And for the first time in decades, its future became uncertain.
And if I remember correctly, this is where the story kind of gets almost unbelievable.
It does, because against all odds, someone managed to buy an actual castle for less than the price of a used car. In this next and final part, we're going to talk about the family who bought the Pythian castle for just $4,000, how it was saved from falling apart, and why so many visitors today leave convinced they weren't alone inside those stone walls. We're also going to dive into the ghost stories that have made the castle one of Missouri's best-known haunted locations.
Finally, we're getting to the ghosts.
We are finally getting to the ghost. So we left the castle at another crossroads in its long history. The war ended, army moved on, and after decades of serving countless different purposes, the castle was once again sitting quietly in Springfield, waiting for whatever came next. And what happened next does almost sound like the beginning of a fairy tale. The army no longer needed the castle. The building has definitely aged considerably. Years of constant use had taken a toll. The grounds had shrunk from more than 50 acres to just a few, and the government put the property up for bid. Now, imagine hearing that an actual castle was for sale. You'd assume developers would be fighting over it. Investors, hotels, historic preservation groups, someone. But only one single bid was submitted.
One? Just
Just
one.
one.
Wow.
Just one. A farmer named Gene Taylor from Mansfield, Missouri, had always dreamed of owning a castle. So he and his wife scraped together every dollar they could, and they submitted an offer for $3,800. They didn't expect to win, not even close. And then Gene received a letter from the government explaining that if he could increase his bid just a little, his chances would improve. The Taylors managed to save another 200, and so they added it. Their final offer was $4,000.
4 grand for a castle. Meanwhile, at this point, people were paying way more than that for a golf cart.
Literally. Even adjusting for inflation, it's still astonishing. Of course, there was a catch. Actually, several catches. The castle had no working heat, no air conditioning, kitchen barely functioned. There wasn't a usable bathtub or shower. There wasn't a proper driveway. Insurance companies didn't even know how to insure the property. Gene Taylor later joked that he didn't know how much he'd owe in taxes because the building had belonged to the government for so long. Still, he believed he was meant to own it, and he famously said, "For some reason, I believe I was destined to have this mess."
I admire that optimism. I would have just walked inside once and immediately said, nah, too much.
Honestly, same. Unfortunately, his ownership didn't last very long. The restoration costs were simply just overwhelming. Just months later, the castle was listed for sale again. After passing through several owners, it eventually found the person who would truly give it a new life, Tamara Finocchiaro. Tamara had been living in California when another event venue she planned to purchase burned to the ground. Afterward, she jokingly told her mother, maybe the next one should be a castle. As fate would have it, they found one, moved to Missouri, bought the castle, and became the first owners to regularly open it to the public. Today, the castle hosts weddings, corporate events, historical tours, ghost tours, and paranormal investigations. Which brings us to the reason that most people know about the castle today. Not because of the architecture, not because of the Knights of Pythias, but because so many people claim that they've encountered something they can't explain.
So let's get into it. Let's talk some ghosts.
Okay, we can talk ghosts, but I feel like the history of the knights is also just kind of cool. Like, how nice of them to do such a nice thing for their community. I feel
Yeah.
like it's such a sweet, like, it's so rare that you start out with a nice story like that.
Well, yeah, especially nowadays.
Right. And it gets, I mean, it does get turned into this, but we started nice. So let's talk ghosts. One of the first things visitors often report is something incredibly simple. Just voices. Not loud voices, not screams, just conversation. People have described hearing what sounds like distant talking coming from empty rooms. Sometimes it sounds like someone is just around the corner. Sometimes they hear footsteps followed by silence. They'll investigate only to find no one there.
That's somehow creepier than seeing an apparition.
I almost agree because it's like so normal. Your brain just automatically assumes another person's nearby, and then you realize that you're completely by yourself. Staff members and visitors have also described hearing footsteps echoing through long corridors after everyone else had left. Heavy footsteps, slow footsteps, sometimes approaching, sometimes moving away. Imagine standing in a hallway over a century old, listening as footsteps echo towards you, only for nothing to ever appear.
I don't think I'd stick around long enough to figure it out, but I might give it a shot.
I certainly wouldn't. And then there's the basement, because almost every haunted location has the one area that investigators seem to gravitate towards. For Pythian Castle, it's here. People describe an overwhelming feeling of being watched, sudden cold spots, a heaviness in the air. Some visitors say they become uneasy the moment they walk downstairs. Others have reported chills despite comfortable temperatures throughout the rest of the building. Now, could there be a perfectly natural explanation? Sure. Old stone buildings are notorious for drafts and uneven temperatures, but believers argue it's more than that. They say the feeling follows them, moves with them, almost as though something unseen is standing nearby.
This is something that comes up all the time, though, in paranormal investigations.
Visitors and investigators have reported cameras shutting off unexpectedly, fresh batteries suddenly dying, flashlights losing power, electronic equipment malfunctioning. Again, there are plenty of normal explanations. Older buildings can interfere with electronics, cheap batteries fail, equipment glitches do happen. But paranormal investigators often point to a repeated battery drain as one of the more common experiences reported in allegedly haunted locations. Whether that's evidence of ghost or simply coincidence, it's up to you to decide on that one. One of the stranger claims involves objects moving. According to reports collected over the years, people have witnessed doors opening on their own, items changing locations, even heavy furniture reportedly shifting when nobody was nearby. Now, these stories are incredibly difficult to verify. Many are secondhand accounts, others happened years ago. But the consistency is interesting and definitely worth noting. Different people, different visits, very similar experiences.
I think the creepiest story probably comes from the owner herself.
I agree. Tamara has spent years inside this castle, probably more time than almost anybody alive today. She's given tours, hosted events, walked the halls late at night, locked up after everyone else had gone home. And she has openly said she believes the castle isn't empty. In interviews, she has said something that gives me chills literally every time I hear it. She said, "There's real people and some not so real people." And then she added, "They know my name."
Nope, that's where I would cut it. Noises,
Nope.
footsteps. I might be able to live with that. I could get used to that. But then you're start saying my name? Nah.
Nope. Imagine, like, and imagine her, like, wit, like, hearing it whispered inside a building that you know is empty.
No. Nope.
That's, you don't forget that.
No, you don't.
And because of these stories, Pythian Castle has attracted national attention. It's appeared on paranormal television programs, including the Travel Channel, as well as BuzzFeed Unsolved, where Ryan and Shane investigated the castle's reported hauntings.
Which probably introduced the castle to an entirely new audience.
That's where I got this from, not gonna lie. Even if you've never heard of the Knights of Pythias, you may have heard of Pythian Castle because paranormal investigators keep returning there, and that says something. Whether they leave convinced, skeptical, or somewhere in between, the building draws people back.
All right, so here's a big question for you. Do you think Pythian Castle is haunted?
I think that it's one of those places where the history alone makes it unforgettable. The orphaned children, the elderly residents spending the last of their lives there, funerals, World War II, thousands of the soldiers, the prisoners. That's more than literally a century of people passing through those halls at one point. Whether or not the ghost exists, that's still an incredible amount of human history that's all concentrated in one place. If there's places that are capable of holding on to memories, this certainly is one of them.
And even if it's a single paranormal story had perfectly ordinary explanation, I'd still want to visit. Because just walking through through a building with that much history has to be fascinating.
Sometimes history itself is enough to send chills down your spine. The ghost stories simply just add another layer. Maybe the voices people hear belong to elderly residents who never left. Maybe they're the echoes of children racing through the halls. Or maybe they're the soldiers laughing after a dance during World War II. Or maybe the castle is simply reminding us that places filled with a century of life rarely ever truly feel empty.
I do have to admit, if someone invited me to go on a ghost tour there, I'd totally go.
Well, I would be terrified the entire time, and I'd probably complain the whole time.
Yeah, but you'd still go. I mean, I'd
I'd still
go. I'd
go,
probably be
but
terrified too.
I'd be
But
scared.
yeah.
If any of our listeners have visited Pythian Castle, we'd love to hear your experiences. Because one thing is certain, Pythian Castle has survived more than 110 years. It's witnessed joy, loss, war, recovery, and countless lives unfolding within its stone walls. Whether those lives truly ended there, or whether some of them still wander the corridors, may be a mystery that only the castle knows.
And honestly, I think it's happier keeping its secrets. Thank you all so much for listening to this week's episode of The Ominous Archives. If you've enjoyed today's story, be sure to follow the show so you never miss a new episode. And if there's a haunted location, legend, or paranormal mystery you'd like us to cover, let us know. Make sure you follow our team member Sam's podcast over at Scare Me Sham, as she does amazing work for us and on her own. I don't know how she does it all, but she
Seriously.
does just amazing work all the way around. And until next time, everyone, stay weird and stay haunted. See ya.
See ya.